Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, our focus is on two books. First, Tim Drake talks with Dan Burke, Executive Director of the National Catholic Register, and he's also author of the new book, Navigating the Interior Life, Spiritual Direction and the Journey to God. Also in our second half, Tim talks with Dale Ahlquist. He is host of EWTN's The Apostle of Common Sense. He's president of the American Chesterton Society and author of the brand new book, The Complete Thinker, The Marvelous Mind of G.K. Chesterton. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for the Register. Hello, Tim.
Hello. It's great to be with you, Tom.
Dan Burke serves as executive director of the National Catholic Register, and he's usually on the other side of the microphone. But today we're going to turn the tables on him to ask him about his recently published book, Navigating the Interior Life, Spiritual Direction and the Journey to God. Dan, thanks for joining us as an author this time, and Merry Christmas, my brother.
Merry Christmas to you. It's wonderful to be here, Tom.
So, Dan, this is Tim. First of all, what prompted you to write a book on spiritual direction? What was the impetus for you?
Well, Tim, before I entered the Catholic Church, one of the things that drew me in was the mystical and ascetical tradition of the Church, which is so beautiful and profound. And as I came in, you know, I understood this idea of discipleship in the evangelical world. I really was looking for a way to navigate effectively in Catholic spirituality. I mean, there's so many different beautiful, profound paths to choose from, whether it be Franciscan or Carmelite or some of the new movements like the Apostles of the Interior Life, Opus Dei. So there's all of these different ways to really deepen your relationship with Christ. It was kind of overwhelming, and I heard about spiritual direction. I thought, you know, that's got to be a great path, and by God's great mercy, he connected me with a spiritual director right away. And I've been a serial directee ever since. That was kind of the beginning. There's a lot more to it, but that was kind of the initial steps.
And in the book, one of the things that you spend a fair amount of time addressing is the importance of individuals identifying their root sin. I want you to talk a little bit about what the key root sins are and why identifying that is so important in one's spiritual journey.
Well, there are a number of ways to try to understand your root sin. Of course, in the Catechism, we have capital sins, which you can find in section 1846, and those are pride, envy, lust, gluttony, and there's quite a list there to meditate on to understand what would be your predominant, what's been historically called a predominant defect or predominant fault or a root sin, which basically is something that you'll wrestle with centrally in your spiritual life until the time you meet with the Lord. So what I did in the book, though, was I took an older, simpler form of root sin analysis that's taken from out of 1 John 2:16, where we divide root sins into pride, vanity, and sensuality as just an easier entry point, less complex, so that people can begin to evaluate their own lives and understand what are those things that will naturally and on a recurring basis hinder my relationship with Christ. When you understand the root, then you can really begin to identify corresponding virtues and attack it both from the sense of fighting against the sin and their manifestations, but also then the idea of complete repentance, where we pursue the virtues that Christ would have us emulate to strengthen our will both against the sin and then to live out a holy life in Christ.
I think it's also important to address, people might have some confusion about what spiritual direction is. I think some people think, well, spiritual direction is when I go to the Sacrament of Reconciliation, for example. And so I think it's important to identify both what spiritual direction is as well as what it is not. You want to tackle that?
Yeah, I mean, you're dead on. In the beginning of the book, I give what you might call an apophatic reflection, which is saying, you know, these are all the errors really in spiritual direction, what people might call spiritual direction or be confused about, that are really not spiritual direction. So, for instance, one that you mentioned, confession in today's world is rarely spiritual direction. Now, historically, if you read Teresa of Avila or any of the spiritual doctors of the church, when they talk about confession, they really actually are talking about confession and spiritual direction, because the availability of priests to them was higher and it was more common that those two happened at the same time. But in today's day and age, the priest saying, you know, meditate on this verse may be a tiny view into what spiritual direction could be, but really confession isn't spiritual direction. Spiritual direction is really a purposeful, long-term relationship with someone who can help you navigate the interior life successfully, understand your strengths and weaknesses, and really construct a plan of action to where you can grow more purposefully in union with Christ. And so it's not, you know, wandering around, you know, it's not meeting with somebody who says, oh, you're great and wonderful. It's not meeting with someone to tell you what to do, you know. So I kind of cover that in the book, where we hit all of what I would call the common misunderstandings about what spiritual direction is. And then at the end, we get to the definition we just provided, which is it's a three-part relationship where we listen, pray with the Holy Spirit to discern how we might grow in our love of Christ and service to his people.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction to make. I know that there's been, I would say, a recent trend in popularity and growth in what people will call life coaching.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I could see a tendency for people to think, well, spiritual direction is perhaps like that. It's life coaching.
Yeah, and it's really not. Now,
really?
First and foremost in spiritual direction is concern about the individual's relationship with Christ, their eternal destiny. And then how it is that they're living out that commitment to Christ and the love of Christ and moving in deeper union. And, you know, later in the book we cover a traditional path of the purgative way, the illuminative way, and the unitive way, which are these phases that we move through where prayer is very different in each phase, where the way we deal with confession is different, the way we live out virtue is different. A good spiritual director is really there to help you walk that path, to navigate, to understand where you are at any given point, what might be the next step, how you overcome obstacles. If you're suffering, for instance, with aridity, you're struggling with repetitive mortal or venial sins, habitual sins that you're having trouble overcoming, this is really the stuff of spiritual direction. It's gaining in love and knowledge, union, and submission to Christ.
This is Register Radio, and I am Tim Drake. We're speaking with Dan Burke, who is Executive Director of the National Catholic Register, about his new book, Navigating the Interior Life, Spiritual Direction and the Journey to God, which was published by Emmaus Road Press and is available through the EWTN Religious Catalog. Anyone familiar with this topic, I think, will recognize that there really is a genuine lack of qualified individuals who serve as spiritual directors. Priests are overworked, they're covering multiple parishes, some retreat centers and directors are suspect theologically. What advice would you give to those who have tried, perhaps unsuccessfully, to find a spiritual director?
Yeah, Tim, this is a real pain. I mean, I wrote the book out of a desire to bring this wonderful gift that I've experienced from the church, and boy, I've had thousands of people contact me with this same question. On the website is rcspiritualdirection.com, which is R is for Roman, C is for Catholic, spiritualdirection.com, where we dialogue with hundreds of thousands of people a year about this topic. But basically, there's a handful of tips. One is, I'll give you an example. I moved to Birmingham after EWTN acquired the National Catholic Register, which we work for, of course. And I was looking for a spiritual director. You know, there's this incredibly busy priest at my parish. He is supposedly the most busy priest in the diocese, and he agreed to give me spiritual direction. Don't decide for the priest that he can't help you, because a lot of priests are very holy priests, and when they recognize somebody is prepared in their thinking and in their heart to go deeper with the Lord, that's why they became a priest in the first place, right, is to convey the sacraments, to help people to know and love Christ. So don't put up an artificial barrier go see the busiest priest and ask him. I did. He was my director for a time. But use the tips in my book that I give you specifically to help overcome objections a priest might have, because some people can scare them away and, you know, they're not quite sure if somebody means, are you going to come in and take 2 hours of my time and ramble on? Mm-hmm. You really have to respect their time. So that's one key point. Another would be if you have a good confessor in your diocese, you could say, hey, I really appreciate your insight. Can I follow up with you for a brief discussion in a week or so or in a month on my progress? And don't use the word spiritual direction. Chances are you're going to find yourself with an appointment. If you treat it respectfully, you understand how to manage the relationship, you're going to end up in a good spiritual direction relationship. Another place, I mean, there's a lot of different places, but you can find directors through groups of serious Catholics. So there are Third Order Carmelites, Franciscans, people who are part of religious movements in the church like Opus Dei or whatever. And these people are typically fairly committed people, and they will have spiritual directors and know of them. So those are some of the ways. Retreat centers can be, on the whole, a little problematic. Probably the last place I would look, or not the last place, but one more idea would be, there are three faithful schools I list in the book and also on the website that produce faithful Catholic spiritual directors. And one is run by the Apostles of the Interior Life in Kansas City, Kansas. And they can be found at www.schooloffaith.com. And you could maybe find a graduate from that, the coursework, whether it be deacon, priest, or layperson. There's a school in Clearwater, Florida, and then one in Denver. But anyway, those are just some ideas. But you're right, Tim, it's a real challenge.
One of the things I liked about the book, Dan, is that it has a lot of practical helps and tools, which I think individuals can use as a resource in their own spiritual advancement. For those who are wondering, you know, how important is this? Yes, popes have talked about it. Many saints have talked about it. But is spiritual direction absolutely necessary for my salvation?
No, Tim, it's not. I mean, it's really, I think, an important tool. I think outside of the sacraments, it's probably the best tool that I know of, and I think many saints would make that same recommendation for growing in holiness. But no, it's not necessary for salvation, but certainly a wonderful gift for the church.
For those who are wondering how they can obtain a copy of the book, where can they get it?
Well, the first place I'd love you to go is EWTN Religious Catalog.
Yes.
That helps to support the worldwide work of EWTN, and that's our primary. If you want to learn more, you can go to navigatingtheinteriorlife.com, which is a more expensive way to purchase a book than Religious Catalog.
Dan, I might also point out that if people aren't familiar with the Religious Catalog website, they just go to EWTNReligiousCatalog.com. Spelled catalog G-U-E.
At the end, right?
At the end. And then I think the easiest thing to do would be up in the corner where it says search, just type the word Burke, B-U-R-K-E.
Okay.
And that should take, you know, the visitor right to your book.
Yeah, and you can find it there, and that'd be the primary place I'd go.
Well, Dan, thank you, first of all, for the book, and also thanks for joining us on the other end of the mic this week.
You bet. It's been a delight. Thanks for being nice to me, Tim.
First time for everything. All right. Thank you so much. And when we return, we're going to talk about one of our favorite people, G.K. Chesterton, with one of our other favorite people, Dale Ahlquist. This is Register Radio on EWTN. Stay with us.
Hello. I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other. In our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Tim Drake, I'm Tom Price. Dale Ahlquist is certainly no stranger to EWTN viewers or listeners. Some 26 episodes of his program G.K. Chesterton, The Apostle of Common Sense, have aired here on EWTN. Dale is the president of the American Chesterton Society. He co-founded Minnesota's Chesterton Academy. And he's got a brand new book out there, The Complete Thinker, The Marvelous Mind of G.K. Chesterton. Hey, thank you for joining us today on Register Radio, Dale.
It's great to be with you. God bless.
Hey, Dale, this is Tim. The first question that I wanted to ask is, how did you first become acquainted with G.K. Chesterton?
Tim, you're not going to ask me how I first became acquainted with Chesterton, are you?
I just did.
Oh, hey, I'm happy to answer that question because I don't know why people like hearing the story that I started reading Chesterton on my honeymoon, like anybody else. And being a good Baptist, I was honeymooning in Rome, and I was in Rome with my bride on the day the Pope was shot in May of 1981. Reading G.K. Chesterton.
That is wild.
It is wild, but I was raised Baptist, a good evangelical, and I was a big C.S. Lewis fan. And someone once told me if I liked C.S. Lewis, I'd love Chesterton, so that made me pick up Chesterton. And I just happened to pick him up in Rome on my honeymoon. So I've been married to Chesterton as long as I've been married to my wife, Tim.
We won't touch that.
Okay.
And I mean, you've done more than pick up Chesterton. You've built your entire career and a school and your work around G.K. Chesterton and his work.
Well, yes, I've been blessed. I mean, it was certainly a passion that I followed, and it took over my whole life. I had no intention of accidentally, you know, becoming one of the world's experts on Chesterton and, you know, starting a literary society that turned into a Catholic apostolate. And it's been one amazing turn after the other, leading, you know, to the television show on EWTN. And writing books on Chesterton, but I really did have a passion when I first discovered Chesterton. This is a writer that everyone else needs to read. And that's been sort of my driving force for 30 years.
And of course, Chesterton wasn't, although he would describe himself as a journalist, he was much more than a journalist. I mean, he was a playwright, a mystery writer, a novelist, a poet, a doodler, a lecturer, a debater, and I could go on and on.
He wrote about everything, and he used all different genres to write. He, you know, his bread and butter was journalism. As he was a columnist for some major publications on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean. Because he was a journalist, that naturally he did write about everything. But the fact is, behind it is this amazingly coherent mind and this intuitive sense of truth that pulls everything together so that whatever he wrote about, he illuminated it with truth, and always with an eternal truth.
And that really is at the heart of your new book, The Complete Thinker, that he has written and thought about virtually everything. I mean, have you identified any subject that he hasn't written on?
Still working on that one. We're still trying to find what he didn't write about. I guess one of the great things about him, and what I tried to do, especially in this book, Tim, was get you to think like him, to put the reader inside his head and look at the world through his eyes, so that whatever topic is out there, seeing how it fits and how it connects to the eternal truth. But one of the main problems today, and this sort of led us to start the school, Chesterton Academy, has been the separation of everything from everything else. Chesterton calls the modern world one wild divorce court, and no one knows how things fit together anymore. And so they become specialists, and they become narrow, and they don't understand the connection between faith and reason, in a nutshell. That's the main problem. They don't understand the connection between faith and reason.
And since you mentioned Chesterton Academy, I do have to ask this question. Is the Complete Thinker going to become required reading by the students at Chesterton Academy?
Well, that's a sweet question, Tim. But no, we're not going to force it on anyone, even though the book is dedicated to the students of Chesterton Academy. But what we are going to try to do at Chesterton Academy is make complete thinkers out of every one of our students. And they are required to read quite a bit at Chesterton, and I have the privilege of actually teaching those classes at the end of each year. I teach a Chesterton text to each of the grades, and that's how they start weaving things together.
And just tell us briefly about the growth of Chesterton Academy, because I knew it really started quite small and has seen tremendous growth. How many students do you have currently?
Yeah, we are really blessed. It started just 5 years ago with 10 students, and now we have 85 students. Next year we're going to have over 100. And in only our fifth year, we were named as one of the top 10 Catholic high schools in the country.
That's fantastic.
It was really a great honor.
Of course, Chesterton was a convert, as were you and myself. And what was it about the Catholic Church that attracted him?
Well, his conversion is a long, steady, and very deliberate path. First, when he becomes a Christian from being virtually nothing, and he tells his road to Christianity. He explains that in his book Orthodoxy, which when you read it, you think it's a Catholic book. You think it's written by a Catholic, but he still has not come all the way to Rome. He was a member of the Anglican Church at that point, and thinking he had connected to a great historical tradition, but I think he was drawn to this long tradition of truth. And he said his conversion to Christianity, which was in the Anglican Church, was only his incomplete conversion to Roman Catholicism, because he followed the clues back to the source.
Very good. I realize that asking this question is like asking who your favorite child is, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
You're not going to ask me which my favorite Chesterton quote is, are you, Tim?
Not quote.
Okay.
I was going to ask which of his works or books is your favorite and why.
Oh, man, Tim, you're not going to ask me which of Chesterton's books is my favorite book, are you? All right, well, listen, there's an essential book that everyone needs to read of Chesterton's, and that is Orthodoxy, the one I just referred to. And it's sort of the trunk of the tree that you keep coming back to, because all of his other books seem to refer back to all the ideas he brings up in that one. Although, the thing about Chesterton is that each of the parts contains the whole. So any Chesterton book you pick up, you really get a feel for his complete thinking, because he does write about everything in any book he writes. And that's why in a book on an artist, a rather forgotten artist named G.F. Watts, he has this long explanation of language, which you wouldn't expect in a book on art. And his book on Dickens, he's actually pointing to things about social justice and joy and hope that you wouldn't expect in a book of literary criticism. And I think Orthodoxy is sort of the book that I do keep returning to, but when I call it my favorite... No, Tim, I'm not going to call it my favorite. Don't make me say which is my favorite book. Don't ever ask me that question again, Tim, okay?
All right. Well, maybe we just won't have you on the program again, Dale.
Well, I tell you what we could do. I could come back and I could predict every question you ask me, and then I'll have the answers ready then.
All right. And with Christmas just around the corner, I want to ask this question. Chesterton, of course, is a big fan of Christmas and wrote about it. And I'm just wondering if there's anything in particular that he's written about the topic of Christmas that we should keep in mind over the next few days.
Well, I think one of the things that strikes me, he certainly did write a lot about Christmas. One of the things I really love is a poem called The Wise Men. And in several other places he writes about the wise men. And he makes the point, of course, that they come out of the East looking for the truth. And so much of the division in religious and philosophical thinking in the world is a separation of East and West. And when people give up on the Catholic Church, which is the tradition of the West, they start looking towards Eastern religions. And every modern-day religion is sort of a variation of an old Eastern religion. It's something to do with a search for nothingness or a relativism or a... belief in reincarnation or something like that. And those are all Eastern ideas. And Chesterton's great point is that the wise men came out of the East and found the truth in the Christ child, in the incarnation. And the kings were humbled because the kings found their king. The shepherds found their shepherd. And we find the fullness of truth in something that, the most unexpected way that God could have ever come into the world as a baby.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And he also, I know, was a big fan of Dickens and the Christmas Carol. So talk about that, because he actually helped in reviving Dickens' popularity, didn't he?
Yes, I have a chapter on Dickens in my book, The Complete Thinker, and it really is interesting. Dickens was being forgotten in the early 20th century when Chesterton really wrote a book that created a huge Dickens revival. And it's hard to imagine Dickens being forgotten, because he's such an essential writer of the English language and such a giant of literature. And, you know, we still think of his importance. And yet he was being forgotten because he wasn't being taught. And Chesterton created that popular revival and then went on to write an introduction to each one of Dickens' novels. And really, you know, he's never really gone out of popularity since. But certainly the work that we most associate with Dickens, especially this time of year, is A Christmas Carol, and it really is a story about conversion. I don't think there really is a better artistic portrayal of conversion than the story of Scrooge.
Well, Dale, I want to just say thank you for being with us on Register Radio. Thank you for all of your work with EWTN and on Chesterton, and thanks for the new book. How can people get a hold of The Complete Thinker?
It's certainly available at chesterton.org. It's also available at the Ignatius Press website, which I guess is ignatius.com. And I'm hoping EWTN catalog is carrying it, but I don't know that they are. They usually get all my books in there eventually, and if it's not in there, I'm sure it will be. But right now, you can certainly get it at chesterton.org, and lots of other good information about Chesterton, too.
Well, thanks for being with us, Dale, and I wish you a Merry Christmas.
Hey, Tim, it's always a pleasure. You're one of my favorite people in the world, and God bless you and your family.
Thank you. Thank you, Dale,
God
as well.
Bless you.
My thanks as well. Hey, don't forget, you can listen to the show again by going to ncregister.com. Be sure to look for the picture of the microphone to listen to or download the show. And, Tim, since this is our last show before Christmas, I want to wish you and your family a very joyous Christmas from all of us.
And likewise, Tom.
Thank you so much, and thank you for joining us this time on Register Radio. For all of us at The Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.